I would think, related to whatever the percentage is necessary to try to make it conservation neutral. So I'm just wondering if it just makes more sense to say, well, look, if, well, first of all, is it not conservation neutral now? And if it's not, what would be the appropriate tax to try to make it conservation neutral? I mean, is it a punitive, you know, or is it going to be a punitive tax, or is it really these, what is the intent of the tax, I guess? If it's to make a conservation neutral, then it should be whatever that number turns out to be, 50% or 5% or whatever.
Anyone else in the audience? If I could ask somebody in the back of the room if they could shut that door, it would be helpful. Anyone else in the audience? Okay, back to the council. Rip?
Just one comment that I wanted to ask the proposer of it was in your original discussion, and I think I like this idea a lot. In your original proposal, you had talked about having it be equal to or greater than the transfer tax, and then that would move people towards the transfer. This I see as being equal. It has some merit, but to me, the other way really pushed things in the direction that I thought would be good, and I think moves, you know, if there were some level of tax there, moves things towards being conservation neutral, and gets done what I think we're trying to get done.
Yeah, I actually thought about it a lot, and what I kind of came up with is, my belief is that if all things are equal at this point, that the paperwork and the hassles associated with owning another permit will probably tip people towards getting rid of it. I'm not sure we have to make the leasing tax punitive above the other tax, but I'm certainly not wed to this as the formula. I'm just putting this forward as one possible alternative. Because I do think that I really do believe that if all things are equal, you got to file do not fish reports every month. You got to you got all this stuff you got to do to maintain that second permit, and I think a lot of people will shed them if all things are equal.
Anyone else on the council? Jim Arlen?
Yeah, I know. When we put leasing in, it was as a mitigator, and in my mind, it was to help. To be honest with you, smaller fishermen. And I think the evidence shows that it has done that. It has helped a lot of the smaller fishermen be able to combine days and permits and things like that, and bigger fishermen. But I always keep in mind something, that people that will pay a tax will be bigger companies. People with more money can afford to pay a tax, and you're disadvantaging some of these smaller boats that are trying to stay alive and combine each other. Now, I know days at sea use is not a full gauge of whether this has been conservation neutral or not, but I can't see a huge increase in days at sea use over the past few years because of leasing. I see movement, but not, the number of leases isn't causing more days at sea to be used. And I could be wrong, but anything I've seen doesn't say we're using more days at sea because of leasing. So I think we looked at this in framework 42 also, and we came up with that it may be not quite conservation neutral, but I don't think we came up with that it was a big number. Could be wrong on that. So at this point, for those reasons I'm mentioning, I think I'm opposed to this.
Anyone else on the council? Sorry, Tom.
It might be helpful to know what the goal is here, so that the PDT has some idea how to look at this, what's the appropriate level for setting the tax. Is the goal to try and encourage transfers as opposed to leases? Is it to try and make the programs or program conservation neutral? I mean, what is the goal for the tax or non-tax?
I think the goal is twofold, Tom. It is to make people think more about consolidation and thereby getting rid of all those extra permits that are out there that represent potential effort in other fisheries. I think David Pierce spoke well to that in his letter, and I think it's a real concern. That would be one. And the other is that, quite frankly, I don't believe leasing is mortality neutral. Now, is 20% the right number to make it mortality neutral? I can't say. I've just put this up here as something to analyze. And I would hope that perhaps we could get some analysis of what might be an appropriate number if that becomes our ultimate goal. Maybe it's more than 20. Maybe it's less. I really don't know. My principal reason for putting it up there was to make people consider consolidating permits.
Anyone else on the council? Dave Simpson.
Well, I guess with that in mind, I'm wondering too why you wouldn't word it as equal or greater than the tax on consolidation to do just that, to encourage a movement toward consolidation rather than leasing.
I mean, if that's the will of the council, they think that should be in there. I'd accept it as a friendly, you know, friendly perfection of the language.
Rodney?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm opposed to this motion only because right now the groundfish fishery is hanging on by threads, and especially the small boats. Boy, this would morally affect the small boats. And you can only consolidate if you have another permit to consolidate. There's a lot of boats out there that can't find another permit. They've been looking for a permit to fit their boat. So, but they can lease days. There's still some days available, so somebody could lease 10 or 15 extra days. And now putting a bigger burden on them that they would have to pay tax for those lease days when some of those days have to go for a differential counting, that's even worse. So I'm opposed to that for this reason.
Anyone else on the council? Sally McGee.
I'm not even quite sure what to do with this because ultimately I feel like we need to be spending more time developing sectors to the point where we have some assurances that the monitoring that's going to happen within those sectors is going to keep participants in the sectors under the tax that they voluntarily agree to adhere to. I think that's where we need to be spending our time rather than on this. That said, I did indicate that this was something that I would support given the fact that we're considering giving a rebate to people who have already or may transfer days permanently between now and the time that this amendment is implemented. I feel like there needs to be some kind of balance between the leasing program and the transfer program so that people actually do, in fact, take advantage of the transfer program. But at the same time, so that we need to make sure that the transfer program isn't actually increasing effort, which, in fact, it would if we're giving people a rebate. So you can see I'm very clear on this issue. But anyway, those are just things that I've been mulling over and just needed to get on the table. Thank you.
Anyone else in the council who hasn't spoken? Ready for the question? All those in favor, please. Frank.
I just want to make sure the motion's right because Dave said he'd accept it as a friendly, and I'm not sure if it was or not because the motion doesn't reflect that.
No, I didn't. Sense that Dave made it as, offered it as a friendly, I think it was more of a conversation. If Dave or someone else wanted to offer that up as a friendly, then if the maker and the seconder would accept that, that would be fine.
Yeah, I would like to do that.
Does the maker agree?
I'll accept it.
The seconder?
I did not second the motion.
You're correct. Thank you. Seconder agree?
Yes.
Okay.
It's a friendly.
It's a friendly.
You know what the wording is? Equal to or
equal
greater.
Equal or greater. Equal to or greater.
Okay. Any further discussion?
Jay, after equal, after the word equal in the original motion, add or greater. Equal to or greater. Add to or greater after equal in the next line up and take it out at the end.
Okay.
That's correct.
Mike Leary.
The greater part seems kind of open-ended to me. 20% now. Greater than 20% is 20 to 80 to 100%. I mean, what? It's kind of open-ended. You're voting on something that could have huge ramifications.
Yeah, I mean, I think that this is direction. This is an alternative. If this goes up, gets voted up, this is an alternative that the committee will have to consider. And I would imagine there's going to be an upper bound on that.
Okay.
I don't know that we need to constrain that discussion in this motion. But you'll get another look at it as a full council, if it goes up. Any further discussion? Okay, all those in favor, please raise your hand. Ten opposed. Six. Motion carries 10-6.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I believe we had one other motion on the table concerning the U.S.-Canada area pending some information from the service, and I don't know if that information is available at this point in time or...
Amy Van Atten did a little quick query of the observer database, and for hook trips into the eastern area in 2006-2007, and there were 10 trips observed, 75 hauls of four vessels, and essentially the conclusions are in May and June of 2006, hook vessels caught more haddock than cod. However, in March through May of 2007, presumably the most recent data available in the audited database, hook vessels actually caught more cod than haddock in 2007. So they caught more haddock than cod in 2006, more cod than haddock in 2007. Now, preliminary information from the closed area 1 hook gear haddock sap for this year indicates that hook vessels have been selectively targeting haddock very successfully and have had about 151 pounds of haddock for every 1 pound of cod landed. So if that indicates that if vessels are targeting haddock, they can successfully do so. It's unclear what they were doing in the eastern area, whether they were targeting haddock or cod, and that's certainly not a directed haddock fishery like the SAP is.
Jim Alden.
Yeah, just a comment that what's going on in closed area 1 is, to me, is irrelevant to what goes on in closed area 2. There's not a lot of cod around closed area 1 during the time that this SAP is going on. So, you know, it's a whole different school. It's actually a different size fish, different school of fish. So I just think that portion of that report should be taken, you know, a little bit differently than what's going on in closed area 2. So.
Further comment? Mike Leary.
I'm prepared to make a motion regarding the Eastern area. Postpone the Eastern area opening for trawl gear until August 1st. Longline gear allowed with a cod cap not to exceed 10% of the annual Eastern area TAC.
That motion was tabled, so the correct procedure is to make a motion to take it off the table, get a second, have a vote, and then if it's positive, then you can offer a motion to substitute. Or
okay, I'd like to make a motion to untable the previous tabled motion before lunch.
Okay, is there a second? Seconded by Jim Salisbury. Okay, all those in favor, please raise your hand. 16. Opposed? Abstentions? One abstention. Okay, now, Mike, if you want to make a motion to substitute.
The motion was postpone Easton area opening for trawl gear until August 1st. Longline gear allowed with a cod cap not to exceed 10% of the annual Easton area TAC. Cod TAC. 10%.
Let's clear up the language before we ask for a second. Okay, that's your motion, Mike. Is there a second? Seconded by Jim Odlin. Discussion on the motion? Jim?
Seconded a motion I had a question on, but I wanted to get it going. Mike, can you, in concept, I'm in favor of this motion, except for I don't know how you came up with 10%. It seems kind of arbitrary to me.
10% is an arbitrary number. I figured that, you were worried that the cod was going to be caught by that gear type, and it was an allocation. I figured 10% was reasonable. That way there they wouldn't be targeting cod. They'd get as many trips as they want. I could increase it if you'd like, or decrease it. I don't know what the number is. I just picked randomly 10%.
Jimmy.
I'd feel much more comfortable if we actually picked the percent that that group actually caught of the tack in the past few years so that there isn't, but, you know, it's not so arbitrary. So I don't know. I'm stuck right now because I seconded it. Can I amend my own motion?
Jim Salisbury.
Well, I think Jim's in a parliamentary dilemma. And I would see if the maker of the motion would accept as friendly the cod cap not to exceed the average percentage of the cod cap used during the period, I think it's what, May 1 to August 1. And that the purpose of that is to keep the sort of status quo relative to the utilization of the cod cap that it is now, so that one group doesn't effectively impact the other group in its fishing in this presumed period of time where one can't fish. So it's just basically to keep that longline gear allowed with a cap not to exceed the average percentage of the cod cap used during the past 3 years.
Okay, I'm not sure if it's whatever a perfection or a friendly or
offer that as a friendly.
As a friendly, go to the maker.
The only problem I have with that is you're going to prorate it. I mean, this is a 3-month period. Well, before it was only open for 6 weeks. I mean, are you going to prorate to get the average or?
It's the percent, whatever they.
Right, but I'm saying the last
that was open.
Right, the last 3 years has been closed prematurely because of the high catches of cod by other gear types. So I won't accept that as a friendly.
You won't.
I won't.
Okay. Pat.
Two things. I think that may be a very low number and may be difficult to monitor, and even if it could be monitored, maybe wouldn't allow a fishery for much of that time period. And then the second thing is Tom and Doug tell me that it's not quite clear whether we have the authority to do a cap. There may be some ways around that, but a clear cap may not be authorized by the regulations. So I'm assuming if this motion passes, then the council would no longer necessarily support the delay till October, till August 1st. You may want to think about that and make a recommendation.
I'm not clear on the second part of your statement, Pat.
There is some authority to set the management measures in that area by the regional minister. It's not clear that one of those would be a cap. So there may be ways, without directly setting a cap, to perhaps close the fishery when we reach some point. But we need to look at what options we have. So I can't tell you right now what we can and can't do. And then my next question, I guess, was if the motion passes and we find that we have no way to do a cap, then does the council still support a delay till August 1st or not?
Okay. Council members? Jim Salisbury.
Well, I guess this goes back to some of our previous discussion, I guess. And, you know, we're trying to come up with a way that is perceived to be fair so that one group doesn't impact the ability of the other group to harvest haddock. I mean, that's the basic thing. And you can impact that by one group perceived to be starting earlier, could catch enough of the cod to shut down the other group earlier than what one would have expected. I guess if we cannot find a practical way to do that with a so-called cod cap or a proportional share of the cod catch, then I would suggest we may want to consider going back to just regardless of the gear type that opens on August 1st, because in that case, really, neither group is penalized, because the basics of that is that there's less cod in the area, no matter what your rate is. Whether you're, if one group has a higher rate of catching cod or a lower rate, they all have a lower potential of catching cod when it's not there. And so it seems to me, and they all would have the ability to fish at that time, and they would all have a probably, no matter what your ratio is, each group would have a longer period to fish. As it was noted, in the past, the cod is opened in May 1st and closed sometime in June. If this is effective, you may have a relatively longer period of time to fish, which benefits both gear types. So no matter how you do it, if you the fallback position should be that neither gear type would open until August 1st if a method cannot be found. So if that's something that would, if the council still wants to go forward with this approach of trying to find a difference of a cap or whether that's legal or not, I would propose that I would amend that to say that in the case that the cod cap cannot be determined or is determined not to be possible, that both gear types would be that the area would, the opening of the area would be postponed for all gear types until August 1st.
That's an amendment.
That would be an amendment to the amendment.
Okay. Well, I think your question about where's the amendment, I think it was a friendly tweaking of the language. So that's an amendment from Jim Salisbury to add additional language onto this motion that states or stipulates that in the event that a mechanism can't be found to cap the catch of cod, then the fallback position or wish of the council is to eliminate all gears from the area until August 1st, postpone all gears until August 1st. Is that right? Is there a second? Seconded by Dana Rice. Rip Cunningham.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I wanted to ask Pat just to make sure that I understood the second part of her comment. If the cap for the hook sector was a finite number, a percentage, I don't know if larger or smaller than the number that is proposed in this motion, which is the average number, would that make it easier for you to monitor that number and determine it?
It actually still reads 10%, so with the right. I'm not sure the change was made to make it the average, but
I thought that was a friendly.
It was not accepted.
Oh, okay. My mistake. I thought we were there.
Jim Odland and Dave Simmons.
Yeah, I mean, I want this to happen, but, you know, just to play devil's advocate, if the hook line, long line fleet goes in there and does catch 10%, then they're shut down, and then it opens August 1st. They get to go back in and catch another and unlimited amount with the groundfish fleet. So historically, they could end up with a much greater share of the cod than has been, you know, just has been happening in the past, and I just have a problem with that. We're just trying to catch everybody to be equal. So I don't know if that'll happen, but the potential is there for that to happen.
I get just a question. What do you mean by unlimited?
Well, that's just a hypothetical. As the hook boats go out there and catch the 10%, which is, I don't know, 60 tons, something like that. And then it closed down the 1st of July. It opens August 1st for everybody. Again, they get to go back in, and maybe they catch another 60 ton. You see what I'm saying? There's nothing. So then they're really working up past historical and into other people's, you know, historic participation in the fisheries. And it needs to be smoothed out somehow, and I don't know how to do it.
Dave Simpson.
Yeah, I guess I'm not sure about the 10%, if that's the right number, to Jim's point. And the other, the reason I asked to be recognized was that it wasn't clear to me in this motion that what was meant was not to exceed 10% in that period, you know, May to August 1, whether that's for the whole year or just for this early opening. So some clarifying language there I think would help. You know, not to exceed 10% of the annual Eastern cod tack prior to August 1? Was that the intent? Or are they closed for the year if they hit 10%?
I didn't make the motion. I'd go to the maker of the motion for that.
You can make it 10% for the whole year. It's you hate to limit yourself. I don't even know if that 10% is correct. But, you know, that might be.
Jim Salisbury.
As maker of the amendment, I'd like to perfect that to read. And I want to, since it wasn't accepted as friendly in the beginning, I'll make it as part of the amendment, that with a cod cap not to exceed the three-year average, the percent, the three-year average percent of the moving too fast, of the annual eastern area cod tack. And that would be the whole tack, because whatever that period of time that it was caught in before is what their percentage was. If it's now longer and they are supposedly not affecting, they don't have any impact on the increased catch of cod has been alleged, then that should be sufficient for them to last even for a longer period of time. So I think the idea, the representation was that because they're not catching cod, that they don't need to be kept out of the area. Well, if that's the case, then it has little impact on them. They will be allowed to catch up to the normal percentage that they've always caught, and that would be the extent of the fishery. So that's the rationale of why that would be what the three-year average percentage of the annual cod cap. So it would apply for the whole period, not necessarily open again when the fishery opens.
You're perfecting your amendment. The seconder agree? Seconder agrees. Okay. Further discussion on the amendment? Doug.
Jim, are you talking about the three-year average of that June-July period? Or the entire cod tack, three-year average of the entire.
It's in the eastern Georges area, which I believe has only been that.
But just during
the period that August. In the past, it's been lasted for about a month, the entire tack, 6 weeks.
Anyone else on the council? Jim?
Yeah, I just would like to ask Doug Crystal a question in that. I don't think you showed me the graph of how the cod dropped after that period. I don't think the whole council has seen it, that it's pretty clear that by doing something after August 1st, there's less cod caught there. So I think before we go further, if you could even just explain it, and I know the whole council hasn't seen that, and I think it'd be important.
Tom Warren put together some data identifying the discard to kept ratios of the eastern area of trips and in the U.S.-Canada area as a whole. I don't have the full-out numbers for both cod and haddock, but for cod discard to kept ratios, there's a spike in June, but after June, it levels off pretty low. For overall haddock in the U.S.-Canada area and cod, the discard rate, as Jim said, levels off after July and August, and it goes below 10%. So there is a trend of lower discard rates for both cod and haddock starting in July, but really bottoming out in August.
Who else in the council? Go to the audience. Oh, Tom.
A couple questions that apply to this motion and the main motion. So the three-year average percentage is intended to be the three-year average percentage of longline catches, I assume? Okay. And the other thing is the motion addresses trawl gear and longline gear. It's silent on other gear, whether they're allowed in the area or not allowed in the area, whether they're subject to a cap or not.
Council members, consider that. I'm going to go to the audience, consider Tom's comments. Anyone in the audience? Dave?
Thanks. This kind of sends a mixed message in my mind. In the past, we talked about this wonderful giant haddock resource being there for other people. Now, if you base it on a three-year average, essentially, to me, you're saying, well, if you haven't fished there with hook gear the past 3 years, kind of don't bother. Because, again, let's say we wind up with 48-1 counting in the Gulf of Maine. You know, we might want to explore other options to access this haddock biomass. It may be an opportunity for small boats like mine to go down there. And I think it's unfair to the hook boats I don't know how many it is. Is it four boats? Is it 20 boats? You know, if it's four boats in the average for anyone who would like to go down there and fish with this hook gear, rightfully so, these guys developed this method to go down there with the bait. But again, if some other guys want to go down there, now we're kind of stepping on their toes if you base it on an average based on the percentage of the small number of vessels that went in there. And, you know, I don't know what's right or wrong. I'm just saying it from this point of view. You know, if you can squeeze in a little opportunity for other fishermen to access the area, fundamentally, I think that's a good thing. Thank you.
Anyone else in the audience? Paul.
I guess I'd just take a couple minutes. Paul Parker, Hook Fishermen's Association in Chatham. A few minutes to talk about the fleet that is interested in pursuing this opportunity. You know, to date, there's been about six longline vessels that have gone and tried to do this. As I understand the original motion, it would have allowed those six boats or another 60 boats to go out and try to exist within a very small portion of a TAC that's been grossly mismanaged for almost a half decade. You know, there's no signs of promise out there. If you go and look at the website, is what we've done so far. We've basically discarded the vast majority of that cod, and we continue to discard large volumes of yellowtail and large volumes of haddock. And I think what was being proposed by Mike Leary was a pretty simple opportunity to take an arbitrary amount of fish and give it to a gear type and try to allow them to demonstrate their ability to improve upon a disastrous current situation out there. And I think that maybe the 10% number was a lot, but I'll put it in perspective. That's around 60 tons. It's 120,000 pounds. I think if you went to 5%, you know, it would be a very small amount of cod. The current scope of that fishery is extremely small. As to other gears, you know, there's been haddock separator trawl in the past. I'd, you know, be interested at, you know, one of the things that Doug was talking about was a difference in the gears. You know, part of the reason for that is last year that you had a haddock separator trawl regulation over the fishery after August. I don't know of a single gillnet trip that's ever been sailed out there. Not a single one. I've never heard of one out of Chatham. I don't know if there have been any. So I would really ask the council to strongly consider moving forward, perhaps by amending to a very small fraction, which would be 5%, the original motion that Mike Leary put up there. I think that, you know, if it's found that the agency doesn't have that discretion, then perhaps Jim Salisbury's addition is a wise thing just to cover ourselves. But I think providing that opportunity is very important to a small group of people that have showed with one other SAP that given the proper incentives, they're capable of catching an awful lot of haddock with a very small amount of cod. And this very small initiative here would provide the foundation, the basis of creating that opportunity. Thank you very much.
Anyone else in the audience? Back to the council. Tom Neese did bring up a couple of issues. I don't know if people have had an opportunity to think about them or not. Jim Salisbury.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I find some of the public comment to be fairly persuasive in that it does allow for people who have not participated. I mean, my intent was not to keep additional people from trying things. It was just not to try to keep what I believe is the inability to get away from cod solely by hook size and by bait. to be very effective, so I didn't want to have one gear type in effect deprive the other gear type during a period where they were not allowed to fish. So, but I found the comments fairly persuasive, and I think rather than try to go three-year averages, which I believe is probably a very small number, that we should take the 5%. And if the seconder agrees with that, I would further modify the motion to do that.
So you'd like to modify your amendment to be a 5%?
So use a fixed number of 5%, and I think that would reflect both the intent of what I had in the beginning, but it makes it a simpler approach. But I think the important thing is to say that if that can't be done, for whatever reason, that we still go back to the fallback.
Does seconder agree?
I agree.
Okay. Any further discussion on the motion to amend? Dave Gaethel.
Yeah, the public comment was very enlightening, and I want to point out that one person's incidental catch would be another person's directed fishery. If you took the number that was put up there, 120,000 pounds, divided it by five boats, in a differential counting area in the Gulf of Maine, you'd use 30 days at sea, which is three-quarters of a person's allocation of days for the year to catch the same amount of fish that people are calling an incidental catch. So I think we should keep this in mind. You know, when you start converting tons to pounds and then convert it to trip limits and everything else, you get some sense of the scale here of what's happening. And so I think it's very telling.
Anyone else on the council on the motion to amend? Ready for the question? All those in favor on the motion to amend, please raise your hand. Twelve opposed. Three. The motion to amend carries 12-3 with one abstention. Now on the main motion as amended. Any further comment? Okay. Ready for the question? All those in favor, please raise your hand. 14 opposed. Two opposed, abstentions. One abstention. The motion as amended carries 14-2 with one abstention. Rip.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. At this time, I would like to go back to discussing where we go with Amendment 16 from here. At the September Council meeting, there was a motion passed that said that the committee should cease working on sectors until days at sea modifications to meet mortality objectives of Amendment 16 are completed, including recreational measures and ACLs, AMs. It seemed that the council members, other than the multi-species groundfish committee members, felt that there had been little or no progress on the development of sector management measures. That is not the case, and I would like the record to reflect that the committee has worked on baseline period and methods used to calculate history, trading ACE between sectors, payback of ACE overages, multi-year operation plans, discard monitoring, sector policy issues such as removal of the 20% cap, participation in more than one sector in different fisheries, and TAC carry forwards. The committee did have several motions ready to present to the council at the September meeting, but we were met with a major change of direction. Many of the committee members still feel that the council should be moving ahead with sectors and that we have to resume the process to develop these sectors. There was a tabled motion concerning an ad hoc committee that would deal with sectors. I believe that we need to bring that motion back to the table to discuss it. I also strongly believe that we cannot leave today's meeting without a firm decision to either include sectors or not to include sectors in Amendment 16. The industry has a lot at stake, and they need to make some major decisions that will impact their businesses. The industry needs to know what actions this council intends to take.
Dave Preble.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I am going to offer two motions. The first motion is going to be a motion to reconsider the tabled motion that Rip mentioned, and the second is going to be a motion to substitute. So I'm going to start by moving that we reconsider the table motion from the September Council meeting.
Is there a second? Seconded by Terry Stockwell. All those in favor of reconsideration, please raise your hand. Opposed? One. Any abstentions? Okay, motion passes 14 to 1. Dave?
I'm sorry, did you call? Yeah. Okay, the second motion I would like to move to substitute. I'd like to move that the council direct the Groundfish Committee to continue work on DAS modifications, recreational measures, ACL and AM processes, and sector management for A16, for Amendment 16.
Second. Seconded by Jim Salisbury. Jim Odlin.
I support this motion, and I just want to make a couple of comments about my perception of a couple of things. We've been working on Amendment 16 for 2 years. And every time we get close to bringing something to the council, this council sends us in a different direction. And we wonder why we're not getting anything done. And it's been tough 2 years. And to have your work not move forward for what I consider not just reason or not follow letting people finish what you've charged them to do is just very, very frustrating. I mean, we started out this, we split the amendment to Amendment 17. We were going to do a whole new system. We're back down to now to just adjusting days at sea and possibly sectors, which I support, hoping we can help mitigate what's coming at us in 2009. So that's it. That's all I have to say.
Anyone else? Dave Preble.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. We need to continue working on sectors as soon as possible. For one reason, it's the smallest of the reasons, but the credibility of the actions we've already taken is at stake. There's an enormous amount of time and effort that's been invested in this by industry as well as by council members. And I think that the widespread perception, a fairly widespread perception, that we have gone nowhere is simply not true. The meetings that we have had have accomplished a great deal, as Rip pointed out. But it's important to realize that the reports of these meetings don't always reflect what actually happened. For two of the meetings, if you read the minutes of the meetings, you would think not much happened. But in fact, it was a period of gestation that had to occur. We've had some wide-ranging, deep discussions that have gone on not only at the committee meetings, but also in the various ports and among all the various user groups that are affected. These discussions have been had, and what we've seen is a sea change in the attitudes of industry and their beliefs relating to all of the issues surrounding sectors. Some people are discouraged, but frankly, I'm encouraged. I'm encouraged at how far industry has come in a short time with their attitudes and their thinking towards sectors, and I think we need to keep it moving. The serious dialogue has been had, and we're ready to go. So let's get back to the committee with it, and let's get it moving. Thank you.
Pat Kirkle.
Well, I'm opposed to the motion. I don't think anyone at the last council meeting suggested that the committee hadn't done a lot on sectors. In fact, I can remember several people, including myself, complimenting the committee on how much they had done. The point was that there was quite a bit left to do, and that there wasn't really the time to do both sectors and all the other things that the Groundfish Committee had on its plate, and that the Groundfish Committee needed to be focused on the midterm adjustment, and that needed to be the highest priority. So I don't think there was any suggestion at all that they hadn't done quite a lot on sectors. The situation hasn't changed from our perspective. In terms of providing support to the council over this next year, we've got limited resources. The council's now voted for 6 actions for next year, as opposed to the 5 that were originally proposed. And on top of that, we're in the middle of the GOM process. And a major look at whether or not we're achieving the rebuilding targets in Groundfish. So from the agency's perspective, we simply don't have the resources to support the kind of work that needs to happen within the next year to include sectors in Amendment 16. And we can't support an action that could potentially delay or prevent the council from achieving their requirement to do the midterm adjustment in 2009. So the agency has no resources to support the development of sectors for this next year. And we're going to be concentrating on the GARM and the midterm adjustment.
We have Dr. Pearson and Dave Gaethel.
I'm glad, Pat, just to said what you said, because that was pretty much my perspective, my recollection of what happened at our last meeting when we discussed the progress of the Groundfish Committee, that indeed they had done great work. They had gotten us quite a bit along with sector discussions, but there was a lot more to do. I thought that the motion that was tabled made sense, that is, have the Groundfish Committee go forth with the necessary work to deal with the GARM, and of course the mid-course correction, the modification to the days at sea management program, and then another subgroup would deal with sectors. Admittedly, though, I still had a problem with that, since I thought that the staff support for that subgroup or subcommittee would still have to come from the same source, and so for practical purposes, it would dilute attention away from the primary mission, which is, again, the dealing with the mid-course correction. So I don't think the Groundfish Committee should conclude from the discussions that we have had this morning and the decisions we made this morning that all is well, all is done. It's a simple way, simple road now to go to modify the days at sea management program. We count days at sea as the minimum of 24 hours, et cetera, et cetera. We acted on that, but there's more to do. A lot of work has to be done to work on that particular package. So I can't support the motion to substitute, because if it does, it will just sidetrack the Groundfish Committee back onto sector management issues to the detriment of the other important tasks. And Pat's already said she doesn't feel that the service has the resources necessary to get sector management done in time for this coming amendment. And that seems to me to be pretty much the best, the most important guidance that we can get here today regarding Groundfish.
Dave Gaethel.
Actually, I support the motion. It's probably going to surprise people, but I'm convinced, based on the Groundfish report we received today, that alternatives to the current system have been developed well enough that we'll be able to, plug in things and make the current system work, if that's what we have to do. I agree we do need recreational measures. I assume that'll be the next thing that the Groundfish Committee will take up. ACLs and AMs are basically on hold until somebody gives us some guidance. I mean, we're swimming in quicksand trying to develop something to meet a target, and we don't even know what the target is. So I don't see how we can go much further with that. And in the meantime, we may as well go back and work on sectors. And with that in mind, I'd like to hear from the service exactly what is the bottleneck that's going to keep us from developing the sectors. I've talked to a number of the sector proponents, the people who are going to be the managers or working on these things. They seem to feel that the the legal issues, the environmental assessment issues, all that are pretty well in hand. So that leads me to believe that the issue must be at the allocation end of things. And I agree, that's a huge fight. But, you know, we need to know if there's bottlenecks in allocations, such as we can't figure out what the landings are on a per boat basis, or what exactly is the bottleneck, so that, you know, I suspect the jets are warming up at the Newport Airport right now to fly to Washington. Is the sector proponents prepared to get out and get more resources to work on this process? So it would be immensely helpful to them to know, you know, what are the bottlenecks? What other than, is it, you know, do we need more staff? Do we need, you know, are there administrative law issues that we're not aware of? What are the bottlenecks?
Nancy.
Thanks, John. I'm not going to answer that question completely because I can only address what the issues are relative to the center. And as I said yesterday, as far as the Science Center is concerned, we're fully prescribed. And a lot of the horsepower, the analytical horsepower that's required to go through these analyses comes to us. And as I mentioned yesterday, we're at a point where we need to, I mean, if we're going to be asked to do more analysis, then certain things are going to fall off the table, and that would include something like the GARM. So, I mean, it's one of those situations where obviously we can only do so much. And at this point, as far as the center is concerned and the analytical support that we have, we're fully prescribed.
Dan?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. It's a dilemma, and it's been a dilemma that we've kicked around for some time at the committee level and here. And considering the ramifications of everything, I think that I've taken to heart and heeding all of the comments from the center and the service, I think that I'm going to support this and just hope that we can work for the best and get this through. I think it's a responsibility that we owe the industry. They've come forward and done their part, and I think they're willing to lobby for extra help if we can get it out. So anyway, to make a long story short, I think it's my responsibility to support this from an industry, to support the people in the industry that are, it's been said around this table, of hanging on by a thread. This is a shaky issue, but so I'm going to support this. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Terry, then Sally.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, I appreciate Pat's comments about the resource realities of the service. I support this motion. I believe that while we wait for the GARM, multi-species committee can continue to work diligently. We need to meet regularly to maintain that cohesion that we have when we do meet regularly, in order to better address the rebuilding goals of days at sea. During that point, we can continue to develop sectors and start to begin to plug the holes. As it's been stated by several others, the industry is expecting this. It deserves the opportunity to work with a concept that allows for flexibility and, very importantly to me, accountability.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I don't have the scoping document for Amendment 16, but the way I've thought of it, and I think everybody has, is that Amendment 16 was designed as a way for the Council to develop ways to get away from the days at sea system. And it's become clear over the last year that sectors is an approach that at first people thought, okay, well, this we're going to just kind of put our names in and just in case we move this direction. But more and more it's become clear that people are really genuinely interested in pursuing this as they've kind of tried it on and seen how it may work for them. And I think as a result, the Council's been giving industry up until now every indication that there is the intention of while putting sector development aside for a couple of months, as we did at the September meeting, to get back to it. So I think that's our obligation, understanding that there are limitations that that the agency has. One of the things that, in addition to getting away from the Days at Sea system that we're supposed to be doing in Amendment 16, is developing means to comply with the Magnuson Act with catch limits and accountability measures. And sectors will allow us to do that, and not only to do it, but to do it a year earlier than we're, and in some cases 2 years earlier than we're required to under the law. So I see the getting back to sectors as serving two purposes. One is moving us away from the Days at Sea system on a voluntary basis right now, if people opt into sectors. And two, if people do opt into sectors, we're going to have those catch limits and accountability measures in place, because those sectors are going to be managed under hard tax. Thank you.
Okay, Rodney, you haven't spoke on this.
Yeah, I support this motion also, because we came forward and we asked the industry to think out of the box, and they thought out of the box. Everybody come up with their proposals and everything, and all we're doing is just making a bigger box to enclose them. So I think we need to go on with this.
Anyone else from the council? Doug, then Jim.
I certainly support the idea of looking at sectors, but I have a question for the Groundfish Committee Chairman based on Pat's comments. Do you feel that you could come up with Amendment 14 in the time frame you have to with minimal or no support from NIMS? 16, excuse me.
If I can, Mr. Chairman, I have some comments I would like to make. I think I will touch on that subject in my comments. And I was sort of just waiting to listen to everybody, if you don't mind waiting till then.
General.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I realize I don't have a vote on this issue, but as a member of the voting member of the Groundfish Committee, one thing I'd like to reemphasize is that this sector thing, there's been a lot of comments around the table about how the industry has jumped in and supported it. A lot of the sector proposals that are presented are simply placeholders. There's more of a fear in the industry of getting left out of a sector than there is being in one. But let's be honest here. This sector thing is going to turn into an allocation issue. And I don't give a damn if it's a sector, area management, Days at Sea, revised, or whatever it is. Why don't you just go ahead and deal with the allocations first? Sooner or later, it's going to have to happen. And I'll guarantee you, once that is done, the proposals that come forward would be much better, not only for the industry, but for the resource. But for some reason, there's a great fear that that can't happen. And it can happen, and it will happen. Now, whether or not the situation with the NIMS database is going to prevent history from being clearly determined, I don't know. I know we got problems in the Mid-Atlantic. I do not know if they exist up here or not. But be honest. Tell the industry for once, this is an allocation issue. And the allocation is going to result in you getting this many fish. Now, do you want a sector or do you want an area? For once, deal with it the way that it needs to be dealt with. If you can do it in 16, great. If you can't, do it in 17. But just for the industry's sake and the resource sake, get it clear, get it out there, make it very understandable to everybody that this is the baseline, this is the years, this is what it means to you. I think you'd be way better served to do that, Mr. Chairman. Thank you.
Pat.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The timeline that the council needs to meet for this midterm adjustment is you have to have a DEIS to vote on at your June meeting. So you need to make a tremendous number of decisions prior to that June meeting, plus allow time for the PDT to do the analysis and to develop the document to have it by that meeting. I think that the discussion we had this morning illustrates the number of questions that still remain just about the basic management measures that the committee at this point has identified for inclusion in this document, and the number of alternatives that you're potentially going to end up with despite the good work that the committee did in trying to limit the measures that are going to be considered. So I continue to believe that there's a tremendous amount of work left to do without including sectors in this document. And Amendment 16, it doesn't matter what was scoped in Amendment 16. Amendment 16 was the midterm review for groundfish, and that's what the council has a responsibility to do. So I think I have the same question as Doug has. Where does that leave us if we are in fact going to have to be dedicating resources to make sure the midterm review gets done, and the council is going to be dedicating their resources to sectors? It sounds like quite a mess to me.
Tom Hill.
A couple of points. Having lived through the last time the agency took an action on groundfish, because we didn't, I don't think we want to repeat that. It wasn't good for us, and it certainly wasn't good for the fishery in the context of our process of having public participation and the iterative process that the council uses to develop management measures. And I think that the core question is what Doug asked, and that is, well, if the agency or the analysis work is not available to support the committee, what is it that the committee will be doing here for the next 6 months when supposedly we're getting ready for the DEIS to be available in June? And from my perspective, it's far clearer to me that if we continue to work on the issues that we must have for the interim adjustment, and for some miraculous reason, which maybe it will happen, that we get all through that in a timely manner, we then would have the opportunity to move on without any pressure to dealing with the sector discussions. My read of this process was many people felt that it was going to be a dual-track thing anyways, and that one certainly may be done earlier than the other. I never was, in my mind, convinced that we were capable of doing all of this at the same time, and that discussion was held over a year ago. And I know I raised it, and I think other people did too. And so I think the idea of getting into a we're going to tell the agency that we're going to do this anyways kind of thing, just because we feel strongly about it, and not have the technical resources to be able to do it, I think is foolish. And I don't say that we're being foolish, but I just think it's foolish to presume that the committee is going to be capable of doing analytical work. We've never done that in the past. And so I would encourage us to focus on the things that we know we must have done and work expeditiously to finish those, and then spend as much time as available in a dual track to be able to continue to finish the other work. And if it has to come in as a subsequent action, then we do that. To do anything else just doesn't make any sense.
Mark Gibson, then Frank Blount.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm going to support this motion. This whole groundfish issue has been very frustrating to me. I guess I was one of the ones who foolishly believed that Amendment 16 would revolutionize groundfish management and would do it with industry-conceived and developed programs. They did their work and probably exceeded our wildest dreams in terms of their ideas and their program that they conceived. And my vision of Amendment 16 has been dashed. It's going to contain none of that as far as I can see if we go ahead without offering some kind of sectors. I understand the resource issues and the inability to bring them to bear on it, but at this point I don't think we have any choice but to try to include sector management and find a way to get it done. Thank you.
Frank Blount.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I mean, I've been a proponent of the sector since day one, pushed very hard for them in my last 10 years. And a little history here. If you go back to Amendment 13, Amendment 13 was to fix the ground fishery. That was where we would have the public input and fix the ground fishery. What happened was we didn't meet any of our deadlines. We were under a court order, and Amendment 13 became what we had to do instead of what we wanted to do. I think we're almost in the same situation here now with Amendment 16, that pretty soon it's going to be what we have to do, or somebody's going to do it for us. We've got some major decisions to make. I mean, we spent an hour and a half a little while ago on 30 tons of codfish on an allocation issue. That was 30 tons of a very small fishery in a very small area. You look at the recreational issues up there. Every time this council in the past, hopefully it won't be that way in the future, done with recreational, it has been a full day at Groundfish Committee, a full day at council, and we've come up with zero decision on it. So if anybody thinks that's going to be an easy measure, I don't think it's going to be. I think we have more than enough work up there, and I hate to say it, but I'm going to vote against this motion.
Anyone on the council that hasn't spoken? I'm going to go to the audience. Okay. Frank Moraki, please. Then Vito.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman. Thank you. My name is Frank Moraki. I'm a commercial fisherman from Scituate, Massachusetts. I'm here today to support the council's continued development of sectors as part of Amendment 16. My reason for this request is basically the deteriorating economic circumstances of small boat fishermen in ports in the Gulf of Maine, and I'm sure in southern New England too, but I'm here to speak specifically to the Gulf of Maine because that's my familiarity. In my home port of Scituate, where I've commercially fished for 45 years and where people have fished for 300 years, the industry is dying. It cannot wait for resources to be brought to, in a subsequent action, develop alternatives to Amendment 16, the way it's conceived. Presently, the number of boats has been halved in the last 3 years. Boats are going without doing proper maintenance. Boats are going short-handed. Boats are drawing down on equity for operating capital. This simply cannot go on. I personally believe that it's going to become a de facto reallocation of resource without any process whatsoever if you simply allow the small boat, day boat fishery in the Gulf of Maine to wither and die by benign neglect. I think that's unconscionable. These are hard decisions, I understand. But when there is an absolute socioeconomic crisis brewing, you have to find resources to do the job. Input controls are not going to do the job. It is a dysfunctional system. We've been trying to work with it for the past 15 years, and it continues to elude us in terms of changes in fishing behavior, meeting fishing mortality objectives. It's a slippery target. It continues to slip away. I have no confidence that Amendment 16 will be any different than any of its predecessors in terms of outcome if alternative measures and strategies are not adopted. Thank you.
Vito, then Dave Marciano.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Vito Gigoloni, Northeast Seafood Coalition. We support this motion wholeheartedly. You know, it seems as though if we don't have the resources to do this, looking at the earlier motions that were up there, like developing processes to meet ACLs and AMs, I don't know how we go about doing that if we don't start looking at other tools. I don't know if folks are aware, but Framework 42 is totally decimated an enormous percentage of this fleet. $3 fuel is taking care of everyone else, cyclical period right now of low catch rates everywhere is adding to it. And something totally different is actually put some hope into some folks. And I can tell you one thing, we talk about lack of resources. Just think of the industry resources that are supposed to go forward to make this happen. And people are committed to do it. We thought we were delivering completed EAs. We thought we were doing a lot of that work. Get a lot of these sectors talking together in workshops that GMRI has been putting together. You've got organizations that are rallying around this concept and willing to work together. We understand it has to be a comprehensive plan. It can't be a fractured, people overlaid all over. So, I'm going to roll on here, and we understand that we don't want to have this complex mix of things. We want to have consistencies in the EAs and in the operations plans. We're facing this head on. We're looking at Magnuson. We're looking at compliance. If June is when a DEIS has to be delivered, I don't know how the PDT and the current analytical tools, how those poor souls are supposed to use the closed area model without the GOM results. I don't know how the Groundfish Committee is going to develop valid alternatives when we don't know what it is that we're trying to achieve. In the meantime, why don't we all roll up our sleeves and get something done and have these things ready so that you have the default measures. You have the default measures to go in place for the midterm adjustment. You need to put a few people on that and look at what the default measures would be. I don't know how you can be expected to do any more than that if we don't know what the GOM results are yet. So in the meantime, if it takes an extra 6 months or 8 months for implementation of Amendment 16 to be on target for when Magnuson requires the ACLs and AMs to be in place, to me it seems like an efficient use of time that we plow forward with sector development. Thank you.
Dave Marciano.
I'm not in support of this motion. The biggest reason is the allocation issue. We touched on it earlier today on the Eastern Area Haddock SAP. You know why no Gillnetters ever participated in that Haddock SAP? Because of mess size alone. If you were required to fish an 8.5-inch cod end and a 17-inch circle hook, there wouldn't be no otter trawl fishery in that area, and there wouldn't be a hook boat fishery in that area because it's a moot point when you leave the dock. This is the sole reason I've never been able to jump on board the sector bandwagon. There were so many clouded issues in the past from councils before this one about decisions that were made about fairness and equity and access to the resource. And if you indeed are going to go down this road, I look at it as just the opposite of some of the other speakers. This is the death of me. We never had a fair shake at participation, and now this is the final nail in the coffin by banging us in there, not allowing us equal opportunity access to the resource, and then basing our history upon that. That's the only problem. I like the concept of quotas, but I just personally think because of my gear type, we're going to get, for lack of a better word, screwed out of existence. I'm sorry I can't describe it in a more eloquent form, but, that's my biggest fear with sectors, is there's so many unanswered questions on that allocation issue. And if you want to turn the whole amendment into solving that allocation issue, and we can have that up front, so again, we know where we stand, then maybe. But, right now, I'm not signed up for any sector. I'm still banking on the days at sea because it's all we got. We didn't have nothing to grab. We lost it all. I made the mistake of targeting pollen and haddock. And everybody says, that's great. You're going to have a great history. But we stand fixed to reward the vessels that were targeting high-priced stocks of concern in the shortest amount of time possible. Having good pollock and haddock landings isn't going to do me any good as the cod stock recovers because you won't have enough cod allocation to go fish for anything else if you didn't abuse the cod resource up front. Thank you. I hope you vote it down.
Rich Canastra.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Rich Canastra, Whalen City Auction in New Bedford. I'm in favor of this motion. It kind of frustrates me. And I sit back here and I kind of giggle to myself to see this, again, ready, fire, aim, fisheries management that we've done in the past and here in the future. We worked hard with the coalition to put together a point system. When we were told and asked to put together a different management program other than days at sea, that was shot down again for not enough time, money, whatever it may be. Then at a meeting, the big buzzword is sectors. That was brought out to the industry. And I believe it was said by Ms. Kirkle at a meeting, sectors. We've worked hard on it. We put sectors together. And as the industry, we're willing and able to get it done. And it frustrates me when I hear that the National Marine Fisheries Service does not have enough time or does not have doesn't have the time or to put this together. Shame on you. Shame on you. Throw something out at us that we work hard for, and then there's not enough time. We're all taxpayers, and shame on you.
John Williamson.
John Williamson, Ocean Conservancy. Last week, we had a two-day workshop in Portland at something that we had collaborated with the Gulf Maine Research Institute and the University of Southern Maine Law School, where we brought together lawyers who were disciplined in contract law and put them together with people who had worked in drawing up sector plans and brought in people from the fishing community who were proposing sectors, and had a wonderful two-day workshop on just the contractual obligations that need to go into sector plans. Viscerally, emotionally, I support this motion. I'd love to see sector planning going forward. I think I agree with Ms. McGee that it provides one of the mechanisms, a very good mechanism for achieving the ACL and AM processes. However, I think my organization and I are also fully expecting that the midterm adjustments will be completed on time. We would like to see the ACL and AM processes addressed sooner rather than later in this amendment. Having been a part of this deliberative process and having watched this deliberative process for 20 years, I would expect that the issues that are going to have to be dealt with just on those midterm adjustments and the processes alone are going to take a great deal of attention from this council and from the committee. If this motion is going to go forward as it is, with sector management included in it, then this council has got to make the commitment today to provide the resources to get the job done in June. And I would suggest that that means a commitment of at least 14 groundfish committee days between now and then, and possibly extra staff people being assigned to the processes, because if you consider just the discussion around the ACL and AAM measures this morning, you're going to begin to understand you've got three or four different possible mechanisms that you need to explore and include in that document. And you've got to be prepared to make the commitment to do that if you're going to go forward with this motion and include sectors management as well. And I still think you don't have enough time to do it. Two meetings a month, can you do that? And is that going to even be enough? So, frankly, I would urge you to vote this motion down and stay to your simpler mandate. Thank you.
Yes, sir. The young man in the green shirt. I know I met you earlier today on lunch break. I apologize for not remembering your name, but please introduce yourself.
I'll do that. I don't remember yours either, so. As we get older, the names just kind of go right by. My name is Tom Pacheco. I'm the current chairman of the Board of Selectmen from the town of Tisbury on the island of Martha's Vineyard. I'm a native islander. I didn't move there with a lot of money. I'm trying to get by like everybody else. I'm a little perplexed when I hear I don't have time to finish something to make sure that we did it right. You got layers upon layers of regulations and all forms of government. I've been a selectman now for 9 years. I was Board of Health for 9.5 years. I'm the current health inspector. So I've dealt with lots of government agencies. The for the United States government to tell me they can invade foreign countries and spend trillions of dollars and then tell me they don't have enough to take care of the local little guys is insulting. We support the sector way of looking at how you do your allocations and whatever it is you have to do, because it takes everything under a smaller scale, and it would seem to me like it would be easier to regulate what you have to do, easier to get a handle on the number of ground fish that you have and what works and what doesn't work. I look at this country and I say it was founded on mom-and-pop operations. You had farms. You had little mom-and-pop farms. People wanted to work for themselves. They took pride in what they had. And all of a sudden, we have huge farms. You looked at little mom-and-pop stores, and now you got Walmarts. You're going to do the same thing to the fishing industry. Well, you have a lot of bycatches that you throw overboard because you only allow them a very small catch every day. So every day they get that small catch and enough to make ends meet, and they throw that stuff overboard. Does that make any sense? Consolidation, maybe you want to let them get X amount of fish 1 or 2 days a week instead of a smaller number 5 days a week, burning more fuel and not being as efficient. Does it make any sense to say consolidate the permits where big companies and big money can buy up all these permits, eliminate the competition, and forever take the little guy off the market? Does it make any sense to say that you can't take these permits, and my friend John from the island, he was also a selectman in Chilmark and a fisherman who just had to sell his boat, to try to get his kids hand down a family tradition in small boats? You make it about impossible in some of these areas for the small ones to make a living, the little guy. And that's what we're here about, is the little guy. Not everybody working for a couple of big conglomerations, but everybody having a chance to be in business for themselves and make a fair living. I'd like you to take that into consideration on all of the things that you're looking at. But we in Tisbury, and I'm here to speak for Tisbury, we urge you to take a look at the sector. Don't say we can't do it because we don't have time, we don't have the money, because that's ridiculous. Let's try to do it right. If we end up taking a look at something that you might think is right, it needs to be looked at. If you find out that it doesn't work, then fine. But I'm looking around commercial fishermen, listening to different points of view, listening to you folks who are much more well-schooled than I am in these areas, and saying this seems to be the popular way to try to look at things and maybe the most viable. Take a look at it. Don't tell me you don't have enough time, because if you need it, you're the United States government. You got enough time. You got enough resources. Send somebody down there and ask for some help, if that's what you need, for some subcommittees. But please vote for this and do it because it's the right thing to do.
Chris Brown.
Chris Brown, president of the Rhode Island Commercial Fishermen Association. I've heard a lot of talk today about retrospective analyses and retrospective patterns. You know, I only went to high school, but it would seem to me that a retrospective pattern that reveals that there are a lot more fish missing from a biomass than were actually sold would be clear and loud condemnation of the existing management strategy. You want to fix days at sea? Blow it up. Get away from it. We are discarding ourselves into the history books. Pat, for you to ask us to do anything from this point forward that strays away from full retention fishing is absolutely unconscionable. I have spent the last 2 years of my life talking up sectors and espousing the virtue of responsible stewardship and full retention harvesting in southern New England. I have had my boat burned to the waterline. I have had death threats, and I'm not done. You talk about not having any money. We're sitting on Bellevue Friggin' Avenue. This is the most opulent street on the East Coast. We have rented a hall. I couldn't afford a chandelier in this place. Mother of God, don't talk to me about money. You know,
I'm going to use myself as an example. I've owned the same boat for 28 years. I built it from a pile of wood. My boat is paid for. My house is more paid for than not. My wife works hard. My kids are almost out of the house. I should be in pretty good shape. But I don't know if I can survive the next round of days at sea cuts or further daily allocation reductions. We have to get away from this. You know, I work hard for the resource. I come to meetings. I read all I can. I lead a bunch of guys who believe in what we're trying to do. I should be the poster child for the guy that can find his way through and pick his way through management and come out on the other side successfully. And Pat, believe me when I tell you, I don't think I can make it without sectors. Right now, we're showing that we're throwing away as many fish as we're landing. You know, the T-shirt we're going to have made says, "Fishermen cause landings. Bad management strategies cause discards." Let's get away from days at sea. Let's get on with Amendment 16 and the development of sectors. Thank you.
Take a few more comments. I just want to remind people not to address anyone but me if you want to talk about comments that have been made. I know this is an emotional issue. There's a lot at stake, but just for the future reference, just direct everything through me. Mike Flaherty.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mike Flaherty, recreational fisherman from Wareham, Massachusetts. I think I support this motion, but I need to understand it a little better as far as recreational measures. And measures is plural, and I'd like to know what is on the table for recreational right now, because I think it's just allocation. Maybe Tom?
The answer is there are no recreational measures that have been decided upon by the committee yet. The next committee meeting, then one of the next things that we're going to do is look at the timeline and the committee meeting schedule. The next meeting that we have is supposed to cover recreational measures and ACLs and AMs.
I support this. I last I knew when the recreational advisory panel met, they had basically narrowed down to support for a formal allocation. And, you know, recreational matters at this council take maybe, what, 5% of what gets discussed here, and yet we're being pushed to the back again. I think we deserve something formal. I think it was mentioned at the advisory panel that pretty much we're going to be told what our allocation is going to be. It's going to be based on when the first sector was created and what those figures were at that time, or last X amount of years of the GARM, and we'll go with it. But I think it should move forward. Thank you.
Okay. At the end there, I can't see your face in the corner. And then, Mr. Mayhew, I think I saw your hand up. You'll have the last word from the audience.
Thank you, Chairman. Jennifer Littoral from the Island Institute and a member of the Midcoast Fishermen's Association in Maine. We support this motion, and like other states, ours has been built on small mom-and-pop businesses, and this group of Midcoast fishermen in Port Clyde are very dependent on an alternative to days at sea and feel that this is their only survival with having sectors as an option. Thank you.
Mr. Mayhew.
My name is Jonathan Mayhew. I spoke a little earlier on a different matter, but I'd like to add to the record four letters from the various towns, four of the towns, Agartown, Aquinnah, town of West Tisbury, and town of Chilmark, all from the selectman's office, stating that they're very much in support of the sector management plan. Also, we have another. I was a selectman for 9 years, on the planning board for 9 years. Buddy Vanderpool was here to speak. Former selectman from Gayhead, also a member of the tribal council of the tribe of Wampanoags of Aquinnah. And my personal experience, I already said that I feel like I'm a victim, but it's not, I'm not so, from Amendment 1 to Amendment 15. Chris Brown had it right. The Days at Sea program, it's created something that I don't think anybody really saw coming down the pike. I mean, we knew we had to cut back. There were some good things that came out of regulations. You know, the 6.5-inch square mesh was a very good step in trawl fishing for size selectivity. But there's been a lot of other very bad things, and the discard issue is just incredible in its own right. I mean, I first got training, and it wasn't from New England Management Council, but each council took different species, and I got trained to throw fluke overboard alive. And I had the very distinct displeasure once of fishing where I was only allowed 500 pounds, and the guy from North Carolina was allowed 20,000 pounds right beside me, outside my backyard, south of Martha's Vineyard, where I'd fished every year, every fall for fluke as they migrated offshore. And I was like, wow, there's something wrong with this picture. Well, then I've since been trained to throw codfish overboard because I'm only allowed so much. And then one of my favorite species, yellowtail, suddenly they're training me to throw yellowtail overboard. And I'm sitting there going, you know, I can't pass this on. You know, this is just absurd. So that's why I made the decision to get to sell my days at sea. And since then, you know, I've spent watch after watch and day after day looking at this problem. I mean, you guys think you guys study it. The fishermen out there who are trying to survive really study it. And we're going, wow, you know, this is really screwed up. 15 amendments. And here we're down to 46 days. And, you know, how could we possibly continue? But the bigger impact that I see that really scares me and the people in the small communities is that the unintended consequence is that bigger corporations in the ports where you sell your product are buying up the days at sea. In my case, it went to the Gloucester Fishermen's Survival Trust, which I was very happy to see. I said, thank God there's going to be some Gloucester fishermen that are going to get to utilize my history, not some big corporation. But there are corporations that are in that process, and Sea Clam is an example that you guys didn't manage, but how many companies are there, 3 or 5, that have 95% of the quota? And we've seen it, as was stated earlier, in the family farms and family mom-and-pop stores. And then where you really hurt, where it really hurts, is the root of a community. And the communities on the islands, and I'm sure in Maine and Provincetown, and it's very damaging. I would employ 30 people shucking in the wintertime, and that was the community. I mean, everybody was doing it, and it was a very lively thing. And growing up, you see things like, you know, I grew up with tribal members fishing. My father's best friend was the Wampanoag, and he sometimes went sword fishing with him. A fellow by the name of Walter Manning, and I grew up fishing on his boat. He fished with my father. And there was a true sense of island community, and people of down island guys fished with up island guys. We are totally losing that. And that's, I think, the direct cause of days at sea. I think you really need to get back to a sector plan so that our history, I know you guys are busy and you're up against deadlines, but this is your 16th amendment. Are we supposed to wait for amendment 17 and we're that much further away from this history? I'm really pleased that you revisited this issue, and I hope you go forward with it. I know it is Mr. Rule brought up this allocation issue, and it's going to come down to allocations. It always comes down to how many fish, who can catch what. But as far as the concept of small communities and the impacts there, not just the dollar impact on the value of a day at sea, I think is much more important than just cutting back and cutting back and cutting back and putting people out of business. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Mayhew. Come yep. back to the council. We'll take a 10-minute break.
So need to understand the realities of this situation. We need to go into this with our eyes open. Basically, the service has told us that there's not going to be much of, if any, support in terms of essentially analysis work on sectors. I think that the reality is that even with that support, this is going to be a push to get this done. I hate to say this because essentially I'm hopelessly optimistic. I was optimistic when we started this process. I was optimistic that we would, in fact, find a way to get off of the Days at Sea program, to move to something that would allow the industry essentially to better determine their own fate. I was at the beginning optimistic, and I don't mind saying it right now, I'm scared. I'm scared because if we fail at doing this, we will have failed on every major ground fish action. We will lose all credibility with the service. I think we will lose credibility within the industry. And we will give the industry a false hope that we are moving forward when, if we end up in an emergency situation, it is likely to be substantially worse than where we are today. To do this, and I think that the council and the committee needs to have their eyes open, we will have to stay incredibly focused. And as Frank pointed out, we took an hour and a half to try and figure out 30,000 pounds of fish. So how we operate, and this will have to be something that people consciously do, we are going to have to change. We are going to have to make decisions. We are going to have to make decisions and stick by them, and we're going to have to make those decisions pretty quickly. Otherwise, we are going to set ourselves up for a failure. And I don't think we can afford that. And I will tell you right up front, I don't know which way I'm going to vote on this, and I won't know which way I'm going to vote until we get to the vote. One thing that I would throw out as a possibility, and I don't know if it would have a substantial impact, but that would be to attempt to move ahead with sectors under Amendment 16 with the knowledge that we're not going to implement anything on the 1st of May in 2009, but you might look for doing it in the 1st of May in 2010 or some later date. I don't know if that will make a substantial difference. Again, I don't know if the service wants to comment, but I know that they're, I mean, again, I'm a supporter of the sectors. I think that there has been this sense that we can blindly go ahead and do it. It's not going to be easy, folks. It's truly not going to be easy. Doesn't mean we can't do it, but I think everybody needs to recognize just how hard it is going to be to get done. Thank you.
Jim Alden.
Yeah, just I got a comment on this. I look at the motion, and I hear that, well, we can't get it done. Yet in the motion, we're attempting to do things that we're not required to have in place until 2010 and 2011, and that is the ACLs and the accountability measures. And some of the stocks we won't have to have in place till 2011 because not all our groundfish stocks are overfished. And they won't be when we do the GARM. I don't know how many will be or won't be, but that will lighten the load. So it just looks to me like we need the adjustment in 2009. We need the sectors in 2009 to achieve the things that Sally was talking about, which is accountability, attempting to give the industry some flexibility, and maybe even getting closer to OI than we are failing at right now. Yet, here we have no resources, We don't have enough resources, but we have to accomplish something that's not due in 09. So, I mean, I support the motion. I just needed to say that. I just can't see if we have to give up something, let's postpone the work on the ACLs and AMs, get the 09 stuff done and do that in 17 and have it implemented when it needs to be implemented, which is 010. And some of them in 011. So I think we're backwards here. If we have a shortage of resources, let's deal with what has to be done in 09.
Anyone else on the council? Dana Rice.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Very briefly, I just would like to quote Ben Franklin, I think, and this is a case where we all hang together or we all hang separately. Mr. Chairman, I urge you to move the question.
All right, Dana. Before I do that, I did indicate to a member of the audience back when we were in the audience, hearing comments from the audience, that I would hear their comments. So, Dan Holland, if you still want to make your comment, please come forward.
I'll just make it very brief. Dan Holland, Gulf of Maine Research Institute. I just want to say that we've been working with several groups in the industry to try and move sectors forward. This has brought parts of the industry together that typically haven't worked together in the past. I think it's united more of the industry than it's united again around anything in the past here. Industry is taking the responsibility to do the things that it's been asked, to be accountable for its catch, to reduce discards. And the alternative of moving forward with sectors is to go forward with, to continue with this status quo for potentially 5 more years or something. In the meantime, you're sacrificing huge amounts of revenues from the fishery, through discarded catch, inability to target certain species. A large part of the industry, particularly some of the groups, the smaller vessels in some of the small communities, won't last through that period. And all this for the sake of potentially a few $100,000 of resources that are required to do this analysis. You're sacrificing $25 to $50 million a year over the next 5 years for a couple $100,000 of resources now. This is like throwing out a brand new car because you have a flat tire.
Okay, back to the council. Call a question. It's going to be a roll call vote. And while Paul's getting the sheet ready, ask staff, Tom, if there's anything you want to add before we take this vote. No? Okay.
Please read the motion and answer yes, no, or abstain. Rodney Avila. Avila. Frank Blount.
No.
Rip Cunningham.
Yes.
David Pierce.
Yes.
David Gaethel.
Yes.
Tom Hill.
No.
Mike Leary.
Yes.
Sally McGee.
Yes.
Pat Kirkle.
No.
Terry Stockwell.
Yes.
Doug Grout. Jimmy Odlin.
Yes.
Dave Preble.
Yes.
Dana Rice.
Yes.
Jim Salisbury.
Yes.
David Simpson.
No.
And Mark Gibson.
Yes.
Motion carries.
Okay, that motion carried 13-4. Tom, do you have questions now?
I think the last item from the Ground Fish Committee will be to take a look at the timeline and the meeting schedule and see if there are any comments on that or whether after the actions at this meeting we will need to sit down and look at it and try and fine-tune it ourselves. For everybody, it is document number 8.
You want me to go through this? Rip asked me to just kind of summarize briefly the timeline. There is a, as he pointed out, document number 8 in the binder. Bottom line is we got about 7 months to go till we get the DEIS vote in June. You've seen parts of the schedule already. Scoping is all over with. It ended in December. We are working on alternative development. Just to remind everybody that we intend to go to public hearings in June and July after voting the first week of June on a DEIS. The final GARM meeting, the final meeting of four, will be held in the early part of August. We'll get those results a few weeks later. And the council will have to vote to make a decision at a council meeting, which I think is currently scheduled for the first week of October or thereabouts. We'll have a short period of time to develop the document and submit it, and then the plan is for NIMS to implement management measures on May 1st. So in order to meet the schedule, the council at the last meeting asked for a timeline. The chair and I have sort of sketched out, I don't know what that is either. Anyway, the chair and I sketched out sort of a plan. Maybe some of this will change after today's discussion, but I don't think so, where we tried to look at what we would do what, when, at which particular meeting. We're hoping to hold, we've got identified, I think, 6 meetings between now and August, September. Possibility always exists that we may try and shoehorn more in. But this is just an idea of how we would try and lay out what we would do at what meeting. Meeting 1, which originally we had hoped to do in November or early December, and meeting 2, which we talked about December, early January, those two meetings we're looking now perhaps to have a 2-day meeting around the middle of December to cover those particular issues. I have to say that with respect to meeting 2 in December, there could be some difficulty in the PDT getting draft effort control alternatives ready by that date, so that may be changed. The committee decided to try and delay to hopefully allow a little more time for some of the issues with respect to ACLs and AMs to be laid out, to try and delay perhaps until a meeting in late January just prior to the February council meeting to address those alternatives. And also we would expect that there will take some back and forth between the committee and the PDT on effort control, so we would probably revisit those at the third meeting in late January. The goal would be for the council to agree on the alternatives that will be analyzed in the DEIS at the meeting in early February and send the PDT charging off to start working on the DEIS. That means we've built in a little bit of a cushion here, perhaps, to resolve some of the issues that are no doubt going to come up with respect to how the management measures should be worded, what they mean, clarifications, that type of thing, which we take care of at a meeting probably in March. It may also be a chance to revise anything or react to any direction we get from the council in February. The GARM will hold a reference point meeting where they will review the reference points. I think that meeting is scheduled for late April, early May. And so that will, no doubt, those reference points could be different than the ones we have, which will require us to take another look at our management measures to make sure that they match up fairly well with the reference points. And we will have to consider reviewing any changes caused by the changes in reference points. Presumably, the committee may also want to identify a preferred alternative for the council to consider in June. At some point here in May, I expect, and you'll see this on one of the timelines in there, though not on this list of meetings, that there will probably be some interest in having the SSC review some of this guidance before we go out with a DEIS on it. I'm just not clear on exactly what point that will happen or how that will occur at this stage. The council will vote in early June. We'll take the document out to public hearings in June and July, maybe July and early August. Early August is when the final GARM meeting is scheduled as well. The committee will come back in August and September, review the public hearing comments, review the GARM results, select the recommended alternative for council consideration, and send it on to the council to vote in October. Just a few things to take care of in August. There's also in your binder, it doesn't show up well on the screen, so I didn't bother showing it, but there's also in the binder perhaps I hesitate to call it a flowchart, but a little bit more detailed timeline which shows the council, committee, PDT, and the Science Center actions over this same time period. This meeting schedule was crafted from that timeline, so they should match up fairly closely. It may need some adjustments after today, maybe not. And anyway, this gives you an idea of what other people will be working on in between the committee and the council meetings.
Dr. Pierce. One thing I like about you, Tom, is you're always upbeat and optimistic. Now, a couple of things. Just to make sure we all remember the complications we have to face, and they are real complications. We have to have the DEIS ready to go June, July for public hearings, and we're going to do all of this before we get the GARM results. And I think we'll be doing this before we get the final say on how to define the ACLs and the AMs. So it's obviously, we have a timeline to it here, too. I appreciate that. But, boy, it's going to be awful interesting to see how we bounce around and deal with the questions that we have for ourselves and also the questions asked by the industry regarding these important elements of the next amendment. Anyways, just one clarification, if I may, Mr. Chairman, from Pat. Pat, I can't recall what you said yesterday in response to my question about when you thought we would get those proposed guidelines on the national standard number one, the ACLs and the AMs. Did you say February or January? January? Okay, so it's close. So we should get something then to help us with our discussion about ACLs and AMs late January at the Graphics Committee meeting. Okay. I would only suggest that in light of the fact that we are going to get the GARM results as scheduled here August, September, that we should be planning on more committee meetings in August and September to deal with some weighty issues. I just don't want to see us scrambling to in maybe one meeting or a couple, you know, try to handle all of this. I may decide to go on vacation to escape. No, not really. I'm looking forward to this. So anyways, I suggest more meetings. All right, let's be ready for this and let's modify the blueprint so we have more meetings.
Dave, if you do go on vacation, be sure to leave your phone number where we can reach you. I guess to Tom or Rip, was there any thought about the need to maybe have to schedule an additional meeting or two in that period, Tom?
Yeah, I mean, that may be necessary. The problem we run into sometimes is that the committee is always able to meet. It doesn't necessarily mean the PDT can get the work done in time for the committee to have anything to really chew on. So, you know, while we've only got one meeting on this list, you know, it is possible that maybe we can get two in. But I got to be honest with you. When you start talking two meetings a month, it's very difficult for the PDT to meet that schedule. By the time you have a meeting, we decipher what you've said and what we need to do for the next meeting, suddenly the next meeting's there already. You know, so The other thing I probably should point out is that I put this particular schedule together before, obviously, today's motion and before the regional administrator's comments about support or non-support for sector development. You know, I haven't given any thought at all to how this schedule would change if we don't have Science Center personnel assisting with these things. You know, quite honestly, I don't have a clue how, you know, off the top of my head, how we're going to analyze it, for example, the impacts of sectors without their assistance. You know, that's just work that's always been done by the economics branch down at the Science Center. It's not something that I can just turn around tomorrow and do on my own. You know, so I don't know how this affects this particular timeline.
Nancy.
Well, that's why I commented at this point. It's an either-or kind of thing. First of all, as far as the GARM schedule is concerned, obviously these meetings are going to require that there be input provided from us from the series of meetings as they proceed before the final review. And first of all, the end result of that is that any of that input is preliminary and quite frankly could change as a result of the GARM. So I want that out there, first of all. Second of all, as far as the workload is concerned, no. I mean, like I said, we're at the point where even discussions about priorities and what is on the data poor working group's agenda has an impact. We can't do everything. We have a finite number of people, a finite number of resources. We have to start making choices about what we can and can't do. So at this point, as far as Groundfish is concerned, everybody is fully prescribed and directed towards the GARM and the GARM results, and that's where we are.
Any further questions on the timeline? Jim?
Yeah, this is a little more specific, but I just want to manage expectations. I sense that we're getting pressured to push things back a little bit from times that we've agreed to. With regard to that final GARM meeting, it is on August the 4th to the 8th, and the agreed-to date for us releasing the report with the final numbers is September the 2nd. And I know that Tom would like to have those results as soon as possible, and that's why he mentioned two to 3 weeks after the meeting. And we'd like to provide you with those numbers as soon as possible, but you have to realize that there are a lot of numbers in those reports, and they require close checking and a lot of editing. So we're still keeping that September 2nd date as our release point for the report. And the other thing that you mentioned is the biological reference points. We will be figuring out what the appropriate biological reference points are at the meeting in late April and releasing preliminary results to the council for them to include. But again, we've mentioned this before. In the August meeting, some of those numbers may change because additional data could be included or some mistakes may be encountered that will be corrected along the way. So I just want to keep the timeline, want you to remember that, and we do try to work with the whole process because we understand that we are a player in this with you.
Anyone else on the council? Okay. Any further business? Groundfish business?
No.
Right. Okay. Tom?
One of the things that the Groundfish Committee can do to facilitate the timeline is we're required to have a reasonable range of alternatives, but sometimes we may have five when three will do, and this is one of the instances where you know, really pay attention to how many alternatives you want analyzed.
Anything from the audience on groundfish while we're waiting? Frank?
Thank you, John. Frank Abel, Pier 6 Initiative, Boston. I appeared at the October 25th council meeting on scallops in Wakefield, Massachusetts, and was able to pose a few questions through the chairman to the regional administrator. And I'd like to take this time, in light of the 13-4 vote from the last motion, to see if we can possibly get some type of response to those questions. I'll just ask the questions again, beginning with, is it possible that a group EA for all multi-species sector proposals, is that possible or feasible in the eyes of the regional administrator?
No. We've looked at it, and we believe that each sector needs to submit a separate EA.
One of the other questions was, how many sectors can NIMS NERO process, groundfish or otherwise, at a time, including providing catch records for the permits?
And that's when we just can't answer. When you say application, we assume that means the operations plan, the sector agreements, the EAs, and all of it depends on the quality of the documents that are submitted, the consistency of the plans between the different sectors, how many of them there are, how much time we have. I mean, just impossible to answer that.
The other question posed in October is, for fishing year 2009, which begins May 1st, when do the sector proposal documents need to be provided to NIMS NERO? Presently, under Amendment 13, it's February 1st of the fishing year, of the few months before the fishing year begins. In 2009, what do you anticipate?
Well, I hesitate to answer that question, too, because I don't really know what's going to happen in 2009. February 1st is not realistic. Originally, when we were looking at this, we thought that we probably needed to back that date up to about October 1st, and that's for completed applications. I mean, completed, not completed from the sector's perspective, but completed from our perspective. And which means that the sectors would have to be requesting their data and information probably midsummer sometime or early summer sometime.
And that begs the question on the catch records. Is it possible for NERO to provide more assets internally to get and catch records to those people who have requested them?
That goes back to the conversation we just had. No, we don't even have the resources now to provide the records that people have requested. We don't anticipate getting any additional resources over the next year or so, and so our statistics program is straight out, and we can't possibly do that.
I thank you for your responses.
Back to the council. David.
Yeah, Pat, this gets back to the question I asked earlier, and I think Frank just asked it. If we take catch history out of the equation entirely, in other words, you don't have to analyze people's catch histories to determine an allocation. Let's say we just take the number of A days divided by the total number of A days that a person has and make that the allocation. Does that substantially I don't want to say simplify. It does. Does it substantially simplify this process from your point of view if you don't have to do anything with catch history?
Well,
some ways, yes, and in other ways, no. It certainly takes a lot of the burden off the statistics program, but it wouldn't change the burden on the folks that needed to analyze the alternatives. So.
Okay. Analyzing the alternatives then, as in, I'm a little lost now. I know it's getting late and I'm getting tired, but it would only be one alternative at that point for sectors. It would be the number of A days that a boat possesses times divided by the total number of A days out there. That would be his allocation. It would be the only one. And then the other options would be continuing with days at sea, all the three or four things we listed earlier. But I I'm trying to find a way that, you know, we need to let the industry know that if we're going forward with these sectors, we can't be analyzing all kinds of combinations of catch history when we can't verify the catch history in the first place, and that we may have to go back to a very simple formula that is basically your allocation of A days and perhaps B days divided by the total, and that creates a baseline of all species for you, and then we come up with some kind of trade mechanism to deal with people who get a species they don't have any access to. But I want the industry to understand that, you know, all these options that are out there at the moment, 96 to 2001 in an assortment of arrangements, and 96 to 2006, and I think there's 8 alternatives out there already, and they all require some use of catch history. And I think, I'm having a hard time getting an exact answer, but I think catch history is the Achilles heel of this whole process, that it requires a very complicated paper chain at the services end to maintain confidentiality and an assortment of other things that makes it very time-consuming on an individual boat basis to verify catch history and provide it for analysis. And that if we go to something that's not catch history-based, that's strictly opportunity-based, then that's much simpler. Because you don't have to provide individual records for individual vessels. And so, again, going forward with this, the industry should go into this with their eyes wide open, that the only allocation we could may be able to possibly provide is a very simple one that converts an opportunity to a quota, to a catch, to a hard tack on an individual boat basis. And if that's not acceptable to the industry, then, you know, the sector thing may go by the boards here in relatively short order. And would you characterize that as somewhat of an accurate assessment, Pat?
No, I wouldn't say that the catch history is the Achilles heel from our perspective. It's certainly adds to the burden. But it's not the only thing we're concerned about, and the statistics group is not the only group we're concerned about. There's actually about 3 or 4 groups that are impacted where we feel there are resource constraints. And although that might end up being the council's preferred alternative, it may not be acceptable from a NEPA perspective for it to be the only alternative that's in there, and so there still would be analysis required for the others. So.
Anything further on ground fish from the council? Okay. Next time we meet, I think, is February as a full council. So have a happy and safe holiday season. Thank you.